WHUR-FM and HD1 Washington, along with a network of WHUR digital channels and WHUT present a special daily drum, COVID-19, 365 days plus later. Here's Harold Fisher.
The numbers are staggering. 530,000 dead, 30 million infected. Even in the face of such pain, there is hope. 365 days later. Good evening and welcome to our monthly special edition of the Daily Drum in partnership with our sister station, WHUT-TV. Last March 11th, when the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus a global pandemic, no one could have imagined the toll would be so widespread. Millions unemployed, scores of businesses forever closed, and schools still struggling to reopen. But there is light at the end of the COVID tunnel. Vaccinations are ramping up, restrictions are being lifted, and many Americans are feeling a lot more optimistic. So what's next? And how close are we to fully returning to normal? We have a lot to unpack tonight, but here's what we hope to accomplish. Provide you with a better understanding of where we are in this global pandemic and a realistic approach to where we're going. My guests over the next hour have the credentials to answer those questions. We will not take any phone calls tonight, but we invite you to join us on social media using the hashtag COVID365. Let's begin with our first panel. Dr. Reed Tuckson is co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. He's been on the front lines educating our community about the coronavirus. And Dr. Georges Benjamin, executive director of the American Public Health Association. Dr. Benjamin is also known as one of the nation's most influential physician leaders speaking about health issues impacting our nation today. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining the program. I really want to start with you, Dr. Tuckson, to kind of set the stage as to where we are. You know, in the DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia, we have differences border to border. We have differences state to state. Virginia is different. North Carolina is different. Georgia, Texas. Where are we from your perspective? Where are we medically?
We are in, as you almost described it so perfectly well at the very beginning of the show, we're in the middle. We absolutely are in a place where we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We do know that in most places in the country, the experience of infection and infectivity has been holding steady at a rate that is still too high, but at least holding steady. And that's very encouraging. We're also at a place, as you have mentioned, where we now have the availability of three vaccines that are highly effective and very safe, and that are now being rolled out across the land. And we will have very robust supplies in, I think, short order. So all of that is very good. What is of concern is, number one, too many people think that this is now the time to relax their vigil. And we're seeing states opening up, I think, in very irresponsible ways. And there's no bulletproof shield that isolates the rest of the country from those states that have been, I think, enacting inappropriate letting down of their guard. But number two, we have these variants. And these viral variants are of great concern. We have particularly the one from the United Kingdom, which will in short order become the dominant strain. And that's important to our audience because it is more easily transmitted and it can make people sicker. And so that is of great concern. And meanwhile, we have other variants that are becoming homegrown. So what we are now, to summarize where we are in a flat out sprint to the finish line where we're trying to get in time to enough people to be able to have what we call herd immunity, just enough people vaccinated so that this virus has no more fuel to burn before the variants take over. This is a flat out foot race to the finish, and it requires everybody to be vigilant until we cross the finish line. It's almost like how you get a guy who catches the touchdown pass, gets to the 5-yard line, starts celebrating, and drops the ball. The other team runs it back for a touchdown. I am very worried that that's where we may be.
But what are the speed bumps in this sprint to the finish? We have seen what's happening in Italy. Italy was one of the worst countries hit by the pandemic early. they're shutting down again. What kinds of problems do you see in this sprint to the finish?
Well, I think the key problem is two. Number one, it is whether we will have enough vaccines that are available and delivered into communities so that we can get shots in arms. And for the Black community, the speed bump is particularly important because there are so many small bumps that limit our ability under normal conditions to have access to the tools we need to save our lives. So we'll have to be very vigilant. And the second speed bump is people giving up too soon and people deciding that now is the time for them not to wear their masks, not social distance, not avoiding congregating indoors until we really are ready. Those are the two biggest speed bumps that I see.
Dr. Benjamin, it was in March of last year that, as we said earlier, that the WHO said this is a pandemic, a global issue. Would you still consider it so, even though we are seeing some improvements?
No, we absolutely still have a pandemic. This is disease is still worldwide, and it is still ravaging several countries. You know, you still have a rampant outbreak in Brazil, for example. You still have a rapid outbreak, as you said, resurging in Italy. There are several other nations where we've just plateaued. The United States is fortunate that we're seeing a big reduction. But as I think Dr. Tuckson so eloquently said, it is, you know, we've kind of plateaued at probably too high a level. And so the concern is that not only are parts of the world letting their guard down, but even though this vaccination process has started, and by the way, we're doing reasonably well in the United States in terms of vaccinating people, most of the world has not gotten much vaccine.
So, well, with that said, and you said this is a global issue, we are part of the global family. So we are included in those numbers, even though the United States in some ways is doing better than some of those countries that, as you said, have not received received the vaccines.
Well, we're still, you know, as you know, we're still the highest nation in the world in terms of cases and deaths. You know, we still had, quite frankly, a very incompetent response considering the, you know, wealth and prosperity and the health infrastructure of this nation. So we're by no means out of the woods. And even though we are doing a reasonable job of vaccinating, and I want to say reasonable, we still have lots of challenges. Dr. Tuckson pointed out the lack of an adequate amount of vaccine, although let me just say it's rapidly increasing. But getting a vaccine and getting that vaccine in people's arms are two very different things. And we've already seen the disparities that we had both in the disease and in the testing, we're now seeing in the vaccination delivery. And we've got to do a lot of work to make sure that we reduce those disparities.
Dr. Tuckson, are you concerned about what we've seen over the past several days with the spring breakers, the college students who are in South Beach, in Daytona, in the Florida panhandle, acting as if there is no COVID-19 pandemic? When you see those pictures, what goes through your mind?
What goes through my mind is that if we have learned anything from this pandemic, it's shown a very bright light on the relationship that each of us as human beings has to those who share our time and space. The relationship between what I do and how that can affect someone else. The idea that we can spread unknowingly an invisible virus that can sicken or kill another person somehow in these young people's mind is not important. That their lives, their chance to party and have a good time is more important than their ethical, moral responsibility to other human beings. I simply have no words that can express the disappointment and the concern about our society going forward. Who are these people going to be? And what is our country going to be when they grow up? the idea, again, that we know that the inevitable result of their behavior is that people will become sickened and they will die, that they will spread this further, not only in that local Florida environment, but they'll bring it back home to others. And who knows which variant they will be bringing with them that may cause us not to be having our vaccines effective. And so, Harold, I think what it really says to me and what goes to my mind is absolute outrage, but also a tremendous sadness for the future of this nation.
Since the very beginning of this pandemic, Dr. Tuckson, you've been trying to get the message out to communities of color, specifically the African-American community. It's been a year. Are they getting the message? Black communities are still lagging way behind when it comes to receiving the vaccine. Is that about hesitancy or is that about access? Your thoughts about that.
Quickly to disentangle a couple of interrelated points. Number one, the vaccine hesitancy issue for African Americans has flipped 180 degrees. We, a few months ago, were seeing statistics as high as 70% of the community not being interested in being vaccinated. Now we're seeing 70% either are ready or are almost ready, and they just simply want more information. So this idea of vaccine hesitancy, while still important, is very, very different today than it was even a month ago. We also are seeing, as you've indicated, lines of African Americans all around the country trying to get the vaccine and having, unfortunately, the low supply, keeping it out of our shoulders for the moment. We're also seeing a huge amount of frustration in the African American community to be able to actually register through the various internet sites to get the vaccine. So the point of it, Harold, is that we should no longer allow any policymaker to deny our communities access to these doses for the myth that says that we don't want it. That's a bunch of hokum. And by the way, the number one group of people in America today who are vaccine hesitant are white Republicans. It's the Trump cultites who are the ones who are more than African Americans. So let's make sure we understand our people are beginning to get it in overwhelming numbers. We know we cannot go back and live our lives, have our small businesses open, have our kids back in school, be able to go to the family barbecue, go to church. None of those things happen unless we can get our community vaccinated, and our people are beginning to catch on, and that's very exciting.
Dr. Benjamin, do you have any friends? And you know, look, you are part of this sprint to get to that light at the end of the tunnel. But do you have friends, associates who are not in the medical field at all, who have nothing whatsoever to do with this COVID crisis, who are hesitant? And if so, what do you say to people who are still hesitant? Because I still have friends who are, and I've already had my shot. My parents, they've had their shot. But I still have some friends who just say no.
You know, one of the things that I recognize is I tell them, look, it's okay to have questions about the vaccine. You know, when I was practicing clinical medicine, I always shared with my patients that, you know, what are your questions? What do you need to know? I'm going to prescribe you this. This is what the medication does. This is how it would make you feel. You know, here's my number. If you need to call me, to ask me any other questions. Vaccines are no different. So we ought to recognize the fact that people do have questions. Secondly, I acknowledge their historical concerns. So I try to do more listening than talking. And I say, you know, what are your concerns? Then I try to directly answer those concerns. So if they talk to me about Tuskegee, we talk about Tuskegee. I remind them that Tuskegee was a terrible research experiment where people were denied care. And if you don't get the vaccine, then in many ways, you're, you know, repeating what Tuskegee did. Mm-hmm. If their concern is the vaccine, and most of them are worried about safe and effective, then I explain to them that we know for sure what this vaccine will do in the short period of time we've had it. We also know what this disease will do over the last year. And if you look at what the disease does compared to what the vaccine does, at least in the short term, I want the vaccine. Now, I also, I'm up front. I said, look, I don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now, but I can tell you this, that the disease is, you know, if you get this disease, even if you get a mild case, you know, those many of those folks have significant symptoms for months. And so getting the vaccine, which is very safe, you know, millions of people have gotten this vaccine. Over 300 million people worldwide have gotten it so far. And this is one of the most safe vaccines that we've seen in terms of preventing you from getting seriously ill or hospitalized, and even reduces dramatically even mild illness in most people. So I think from a safety perspective, it's demonstrated itself in the real world. And is it effective? Absolutely.
So here's my question when you talk about vaccines and the perception for the general public. I remember as a young child in elementary school getting the vaccine. I believe it was polio or what have you. Had the great big gun and you got the shot in the arm, and everybody did it. I didn't hear anybody complaining about it. There was no social media. The news only came on once a day. We didn't have a 24-hour news cycle. And this is to both of you, and I'll put this to Dr. Benjamin first. What happened between those days when the vaccines were given out en masse? Specifically, let's talk about polio. And now, what has changed?
Well, we've always had people that have been concerned about vaccines. We've even had people concerned about wearing masks, you know. But what's changed dramatically is that people haven't seen these diseases because we've been so successful with vaccines. You know, people used to be so fearful of measles. People were very, very fearful of polio. You know, there was a big national campaign over polio. I'll remind you that FDR, one of our presidents, got polio. So the world was very much concerned about polio. And we've done a very successful job of getting rid of polio. Smallpox, we've eradicated smallpox from the face
measles,
of the earth.
Measles, for example.
But measles is an excellent example. Now, people are not getting vaccinated as often as they need to for measles. And now what are we seeing? We're beginning to see outbreaks of measles, which we really hadn't seen for many, many years in our country. So I think some of that is an issue. By the way, many healthcare providers, because we've been so effective at getting rid of these diseases, have never seen a case of these diseases in their clinical practice. Mm-hmm. So people are downplaying the impact of those terrible diseases.
Mm-hmm. In addition to those excellent points, Harold, coming out of World War II, America was fully optimistic and embracing of science. We knew then that we were building a new nation, building a new future. And the basis of that was scientific progress. And so there was an embracing of not only science, but of scientists. They were special in our society. Over the years, that has eroded. It has eroded, of course, as you've mentioned in your setup for this question, because of the predominance of social media, a distrust of elites across our society by multiple different population groups, and a sense anymore that we just don't have the same confidence as a nation that we used to have. And we don't hold up our so-called elites in the same way we did before. This world has changed drastically. And then there are on social media, the opportunity for people to spread an enormous amount of misinformation. Misinformation when it comes to our community, deliberately targeting us with misinformation and misideas and finding willing people to buy into conspiracy theories. And so it is very hard then to overcome all of that. But at the end of the day, Harold, I think what this really is starting to get to for me is that we have got to have a conversation with Black America about science and innovation. We need those tools to be able to save our lives, to give our lives the best chance to close these health disparities, to live the lives that we want. And ultimately, the progress of science is so rapid so overwhelmingly advanced, and it is advancing every day. We see it in our consumer technology goods. We see it in the way products are made. We see it in the way farming is done. And we, of course, see it in healthcare. Somehow, as I conclude this answer, Harold, is that we have to find a way to not have scientific progress be a problem, but be something that we can embrace. And that means we're going to have to go back and really look at the education system, and particularly the science and math courses that are taught to African Americans all across this country.
Dr. Tuckson, why is distribution seeming to be so problematic right now? You just talked about all of these scientific advances and the vaccine, you know, becoming available, you know, so quickly and carefully. But why is it so difficult to get shots into arms? Is that a logistical thing? Is it a political thing? Is it what?
In fact, it is all of those things, and you just put your finger on it. And Dr. Benjamin sort of alluded to it earlier in the show. Number one, know that it takes time to produce these. These are not substances that can be just snap your finger and produce them. It takes time. The production cycle is something that you have to build in. So thank goodness we are moving very rapidly in that production cycle. So it's a matter, first and foremost, of just absolute supply. Number two, it was political. It was the absolute ineptness of the Trump administration, who could not understand, even though they had been told 1,000 times about how the connection between the federal apparatus, the state apparatus, and local counties and city health departments, all of those have to be involved in the process, and they ignored that, and we have a broken system. And then third, unfortunately, the way in which you can become eligible for these vaccines, you need to register in most places. And registration has been something that is required online. African Americans too often have suboptimal internet connectivity, and or a lot of our people do not have computers or do not know how to work the system as effectively as they should. And so what I would just say in that regard, I'm begging all of our young people here today, every young person that can hear us, please help your grandma, help your parents to be able to use the computer and register for these things when they need help. Don't leave the older folk to fend for themselves. We're all in this together. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Benjamin, let's talk a little bit more about vaccines. Some of the latest reports about AstraZeneca, that vaccine, which has not been approved for use in the United States. Some 7 million doses administered in Europe. There have been at least 36 individual reports of some blood clotting. 7 million versus 36 reports, that is a minimal amount. And yet, should that still be something that we are concerned about as we look at the possibility that AstraZeneca's vaccine could be approved in the U.S.?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, but I think the first thing is to know that there's not been a shown relationship between those blood clots and the vaccine. But this is the way we do this. When you have any kind of complication that is of concern, then they stop using the vaccine and they investigate it. And then once they prove that there's no relationship, or if they understand that there was a relationship, but that it is something that it is an acceptable risk, then they continue. But this is not unusual. And of course, when this is brought to the United States, all of that information in the U.S. will be reconsidered by the Food and Drug Administration. And they will look at all of their data. They will go through all of their files. They'll look at all of their numbers. And then they'll make a recommendation about whether or not we should use that particular vaccine. And then if they do, under what conditions?
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that we may get to a point that we will see the use of COVID-19 vaccines in the same way that we see flu vaccines every early fall? You need to get a flu vaccine.
Well, let me point out that one thing I should have said about the AstraZeneca vaccine, by the way, all the it's not an mRNA vaccine. It's a different formulation. And there are several different types of vaccines that we're using for COVID. So that's important. Second thing is, we don't know yet whether or not we'll need booster shots, basically what you're asking. The flu virus changes pretty regularly every year. we are seeing these variants that are occurring all over the world, and as well as here in the United States. And if they become more prominent, then we very well may need booster shots. The good news is that the technique, the science around making those boosters for a virus that's changed, a variant virus, is pretty easy. And those drug companies right now are already experimenting with ways to adapt the booster shots to the new virus, should we need to do that. Now, your question is whether or not we'll need, you know, this shot every year or every couple mm-hmm. years. And the answer is we don't know yet.
Yeah. But what about the treatment? Because there's been a lot of news, we've covered it, about the vaccines, and you don't hear a lot about the treatment of people who have been infected. And the reality is people are still dying. That has not changed. So are we still treating this disease for those people who have been admitted to hospitals in the same way that we were 6 months ago?
Absolutely not. One of the other marvels of science that is not getting the attention that it deserves is the fact that we have truly learned much better how to take care of people who've been infected with COVID. You know, there was a time when we basically gave people supportive care. That means we fed them, we gave them fluids, and if they had trouble breathing and their lungs were collapsing, then we put them on a respirator. We discovered that, boy, putting people on respirators in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, was not a good idea. We learned how to better manage the airway and the lungs. We also learned how to tamp down the inflammatory response, because what this virus does, it creates an enormous inflammatory response in our bodies. And we've learned that certain types of steroids helped address that. They've learned how to take antibodies from people who have been infected and manipulate them and then give them back to people who have been infected. Those are the monoclonal antibodies. And they're now learning that if you use different kinds of monoclonal antibodies as kind of a cocktail of two or three different types, you can even get better results. So the clinical care for this disease has dramatically improved. The other thing is, of course, I'm gonna put my public health hat on and just remind us that the best thing to do, of course, is not to get the disease in the first place.
Right.
So that's wearing a mask, washing your hands, keeping your distance, for now not getting in big crowds, and getting vaccinated.
Hey, George, let me just quickly add it.
Real quick, because I'm running out of time.
We need to be advocates. That's all. I want to tell all of our family members, be advocates for your family member if they do get sick, to ask about those monoclonal antibodies and other things to make sure we get access to the drugs that will save us. If we have to fight for those things for our family.
Real quick, Dr. Tuckson, and same question for you, Dr. Benjamin. I'll give you about 20 seconds or so each. How do we move beyond where we are now? From your perspective, Dr. Tuckson, first?
Number one, we get vaccinated when it's our turn. Absolutely, we do that. Number two, in the interim, continue to wear your mask and social distance and all the things that George's Benjamin just said.
Wash those hands and the whole nine. Your perspective on that, Dr. Benjamin, as well. How do we move beyond where we are right now, 1 year later?
Yeah, we demand that our political leaders and the resource allocators give us the resources to build a public health and healthcare system so that the next time we have one of these diseases come into our community, that we can rapidly identify it, get our hands around it, and respond much more effectively than we did the last time. And by the way, this is not this is not the last time we're going to see a disease like this.
Indeed. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for participating in this conversation and being a part of our first panel of experts. I really appreciate your time. We are going to take a quick station break, and we're going to say goodbye to our WHUR audience. And when we come back, we're going to shift gears a bit and drill down more on the human toll of the pandemic and how we recover mentally. COVID-19, 365 days later, will continue in just a moment.